through the cloth of his sleeve to strike him in the chest. His fanged mouth opened in a shout of almost comical surprise. Staggering back, he stumbled to one knee. Dark blood soaked his white shirt. She nearly laughed out loud. His three black-clad guards were almost to her. Finally, seconds too late, much too late, she turned and ran, her bare feet slamming on the polished wooden floor, a devouring pulse thrumming inside her. She could hear the guards right behind her, their robes flapping like curtains in a strong wind. Racing for the front door, she steeled herself to throw her shoulder against it when a hand caught the back of her dress. She was jerked backward. Tana whipped around, slamming the crossbow against the closest vampire like a club. It struck a woman's face and she laughed, fangs long and sharp and very white against red lipstick. She threaded her fingers through Tana's hair, nails sinking into her head as she marched her across the room and then slammed her into a doorframe. The world went blurry. Tana looked around at the other two guards, circling her like sharks. From the other room, a voice was calling out for them to stop immediately. It sounded like Gabriel's voice, but it must have been Lucian speaking. Fumbling, Tana tried to reload her crossbow until it was jerked out of her hand. The metal and wood blade was within reaching distance, strapped to her thigh, but she didn't want to go for it until her head cleared. "Give her to me," said a gray-clad vampire. She had a thick German accent that made the words hard to understand. One of the spider's core. They were milling in around her, all dressed in the same loose gray uniform. Lucian's guard unhanded her, and two of the spider's people grabbed hold. Their fingers were cool against her bare arms. "Oh, this is rich," Lucian said, as she was dragged back into the glass-domed ballroom. "You stupid, sad, demented girl. He's going to betray you," she shouted to Gabriel. Gabriel watched her with impassive red eyes and didn't speak. One of his arms was free from the chains, as though he'd tried to get to her in time. She hoped that didn't put him in more danger. After a moment, his gaze went to the German-accented woman holding her arm. Something passed between them that Tana couldn't follow. Lucian pulled the wooden arrow out of his chest and tossed it onto the marble tiles, spattering them dark red. "Truly a delight. Let her go, won't you?" She felt hands releasing her, and without their support, she was ashamed to find that she swayed alarmingly. "Come here, my deluded dear," said Lucian. "Did Gabriel put you up to this? Maybe he doesn't like you very much after all." "No one needed to put me up to it," Tana said, staying where she was. "I wanted to kill you all on my own." Lucian spread his arms wide, laughing. "Well, come on then. Do it. Oh no, let's wait until the spider gets here and we can do a little gladiatorial show for him. Do you think he'd like that? Waiting would give you a moment or two to get your bearings again." Tana took an unsteady step toward him. Her head spun. The guards moved forward too. She'd seen Gabriel rip free of the heavy chains that bound him in the farmhouse guest room, tear free from the metal trunk of her car. And if Lucian was his maker, that meant he was older and more powerful than Gabriel. She couldn't possibly fight him in hand-to-hand combat. Even throwing her knife would be futile. He wasn't going to be surprised, not when she was standing right in front of him and would have ample time to dodge. "Lucian," Gabriel said, "if you're proposing a duel, I believe she gets to pick the weapon. I hope she picks me." Tana looked up and saw, all over again, that one of his hands was free from the chains. Despite her muzzy head and the fear that clutched her chest, she couldn't help thinking there was something off. If only she could figure out what. The chains. That was the problem. Lucian had sent Elizabeth out to get Gabriel, had sent her with chains that were definitely and absolutely supposed to imprison him. except they hadn't. He'd been weak after they escaped from Lance's farmhouse. He'd been hungry and burned by the sun, but he'd still pulled apart those iron chains, had still torn her trunk as if the metal were only thick paper. Lucien should have known how strong Gabriel was if Lucien was stronger. The chains were rigged tonight, but they weren't rigged then. "You really didn't know she was coming, did you? To save you," Lucien said, whirling on Gabriel. He reached into the folds of his jacket and removed a slender blade, as bright as the scales of a fish. "Did you see? She almost shot me in the heart." "Then you were completely safe," Gabriel said, "since you don't have one." "It hurt," Lucien said petulantly, stabbing Gabriel's stomach, and then again, the knife making a horrible sound as it scraped a rib. "See? It hurts." Gabriel made a soft choking noise. Blood stained his mouth. Lucien must have hit a lung. "But there's nothing you like better than when it hurts a little, is there?" Lucien asked. Gabriel's bloody mouth lifted in a voluptuous smile. "Sure there is. I like it when it hurts a lot." Lucien stabbed him again, twisting the blade around in Gabriel's guts. Gabriel moaned. "This is what you get, coming back here. Thinking you're going to have revenge on me. On me, your maker." "The nerve," Gabriel whispered, that mad light bright in his eyes, blood dripping from a corner of his mouth. Drawing him off her, Tana realized. Gabriel had gotten Lucian's attention and drawn his anger deliberately. But what was he doing? Lucien had said that the spider had sent assassins after him. Could the spider have decided to free Gabriel and let him work off his debt by killing Lucien? But then why would the spider come? Why not stay in Paris and let the work be completed without any danger to himself? Her head spun. There was something she was missing. She felt it the way you can feel a word on the tip of your tongue. Lucien left his knife where it was, shoved in Gabriel's belly all the way to the hilt, and he paced back and forth across the marble floor. He looked transcendent with fury, lit up from the inside. One of the gray-clad guards, a vampire with dark skin and broad cheekbones, stepped forward. "The spider is nearly at your door," he reported. "I suggest you ready yourself." Lucien looked at them as though he'd forgotten the audience of guards, forgotten the imminent arrival of an ancient vampire, forgotten any bargains. Gabriel reached for the hilt of the knife embedded in his own stomach and pulled it out. Then he glanced at Tana and grinned an odd, conspiratorial grin, as though they were sharing some secret. "Tana, go." And just like that, all the pieces came together in Tana's mind. She started to laugh, the nervous, crazy laughter she felt she'd been holding back since she'd woken up in a bathtub to find a house full of corpses, the lunatic laughter of someone who'd been in over her head from the start. Lucien looked at her with a furrowed brow. She was laughing so hard that Lucien himself started to smile uncomfortably. "The spider is here," she managed to spit out, calming finally. "He's already here, isn't he? He's been here the whole time." With a heave, Gabriel pulled his left arm free of the chains, the manacles hanging around his wrist like a bracelet. He brought up the dagger, stained with his own blood, and ran his tongue over the blade. "She's far cleverer than you." "How did you?" Lucien asked. "What is she talking about for this spider is here business?" "The spider's dead," Gabriel said, his mouth curving into a wide, terrifying grin. "He's been dead. Dead for weeks. Dead when I left Paris. That's how I escaped. I killed him." Lucien shook his head. looking at Gabriel with blank incomprehension. No, that's not possible. He's ancient. You can't have killed him. I'm the spider now, Gabriel said. The gray-clad corps grabbed Lucian's three-robed guards. Quickly and efficiently, wooden blades were thrust into their hearts. They dropped, one after another, with sickly thuds. It took 10 years for my opportunity to come, and he left me a mighty legacy. His secrets repeated in front of me, his vaults and bank accounts and all the things that made him the spider, operating from behind the scenes. But the greatest legacy he left me was his blood. I'm much stronger than you remember. Much, much, much stronger. Lucian looked at him, the full horror finally breaking across his face. He looked around his ballroom, empty except for enemy guards and the video cameras looking down on him. The video cameras that were recording all of this. When did you know? Gabriel asked Tana conversationally. Just now, really, she said. Did I ever tell you how I met her? Gabriel asked Lucian, his chest a mess of dark blood. He seemed to barely notice the wounds, didn't even wince as he took a few steps across the marble floor. She thought of what Jameson had said about crows letting ants sting their wings because they'd grown addicted to the burn of acid. She wondered if you could be hurt so often that you might miss it. Lucian hadn't answered, but the arrogance was gone from his face. Gabriel smiled, gesturing casually with his hands as he spoke, the knife he held cutting through the air. After the spider was dead, I still wasn't myself for a long time. I seemed to wake, lying on the cold floor, surrounded by what remained of my captors. And I realized that with the spider dead, I commanded all his resources. And then I thought of you, Lucian. I landed in the Boston Harbor without letting myself heal, half mad and half starved. I looked very much like I was truly on the run, I think. And you sent Elizabeth after me immediately once you heard I'd arrived, didn't you? Right around the time you sent a letter to the spider vowing to recapture me. Elizabeth and her churls caught up with me by the side of the Blackstone River. I'd forgotten how beautiful she was. He smiled with the memory. She trapped me easily. I was exhausted and I had no reason to fight very hard. After all, she intended to bring me right to your side. In fact, wrapped in steel chains, thrown in the back of their black windowed limousine, I slept as I had not slept in a decade. When I woke, they were dragging me toward a farmhouse. They hadn't been out of Cold Town in so long that they decided to have a feast. Elizabeth and the others were drunk with blood, bloated and slow, laughing over what they'd done. And they brought me into the back room, hungry as I was, to show me a boy already bitten. They'd tied him to the bed and chained me so that he was just out of reach. She said that if I was good, I could have him in the morning. So I sat and watched him writhe. "Is it still you in there?" she'd asked me, tapping her knuckles against my head before she went to ground in the basement. "Do you remember all the good times we had?" I didn't reply. They covered the windows and left me there, the smell of the boy's blood filling my thoughts. I watched him, reminding myself why I needed to wait for dark, but the reasons made less and less sense in my addled mind. Then Tana came in. He looked over at her. And she made a plan to save the boy, and to save me. Can you imagine that, Lucian? Who in the world would allow me to be saved? No one with any sense, said Lucian. But why did you go? You were being brought directly to me by Elizabeth. That was your plan, wasn't it? Why go on some circuitous road trip with a pair of teenagers? Gabriel shrugged, grinning a wide and terrible grin. I liked the way they looked at me. I liked driving, and I wanted to see what would happen. You're mad, Lucian said. You really are insane. I really am, Gabriel said. And I really am here to avenge myself on you. I just took the long way. So kill me, then. Lucian pulled open his shirt, showing pale white skin. Do it. Gabriel took a step closer and hesitated. Lucian was his maker, the keeper of memories of people and places long gone, the monster who'd seen in Gabriel a talent for monstrousness. Tana thought about what Lucian had said the last time they'd stood in this room, weapons drawn. Every hero is the villain of his own story. She bet that right then, about to kill his maker, Gabriel felt pretty villainous. And in that half second of hesitation, Lucian lunged for Tana. He got hold of her throat, lifting her high off the ground. She was choking, panicked, lashing in the air. She'd seen people do this before in movies, but she'd never guessed how painful it was. She couldn't breathe, her windpipe crushing inward. Lucian grinned. Throw that knife and I break her neck, Lucian said slowly. Any of your people move and I break her neck. Say something clever and I break her neck. Gabriel nodded, pressing his hands together as if in prayer. What would you have me do? No, she thought, but couldn't choke out. Don't let him go. My sister isn't safe. Tana could feel her eyes bulging, her limbs kicking. He raised her higher, his smile cruel as she scrambled for the dagger at her thigh, her hand closing around the hilt. Lucian was watching Gabriel with great satisfaction. Take your people and get out of my house. All of you. If you want this mewling creature back, get out! We'll leave, Gabriel said, waving to his gray-clad corps. They began moving toward the double doors. But put her down. She's human. Their throats are fragile, and if she dies, you won't have much to bargain with. Lucian set Tana's feet against the floor, his hands still at her neck. She only had the one chance. He didn't know how much vampire blood was inside her. He didn't know how fast she was or how strong. Tana sucked in a single breath of air at the same moment she shoved the knife in through his chest, up under his rib. It made a sound going in like ripping paper. Lucian's eyes went wide. Please, he said, the word so soft that it felt more like breath. Stop. I can feel the point at the edge of my heart. In that moment, he sounded like the young man he must have been once, just a little older than her and afraid. Please, I will give you anything. Tell them what you did, Tana said, nodding with her chin toward the cameras. Tell the world what you've done. Lucian closed his eyes and spoke. Casper Morales. It was me. I turned him. Then he opened his ruby eyes and fixed his gaze on her. He looked at her as though she was the only thing that mattered in all the world, the only thing he'd ever loved. Forgive me, and I will make every single impossible dream you've ever had come true. You think no one can know what you want, but I know it already. There are those you love that you're afraid for. There are those who you love who are undeserving. And no one has seen how incredibly special you are. You glow like a bright flame. She felt as though her hand were on the knob of the cellar door, her feet ready to descend dusty steps again. She thought of Gabriel, driving her car through the warm summer night, wind in his hair as she told him that mercy could never be evil, and his saying, "This is the world I remade with my terrible mercy." She thought of her father lifting a shovel. She thought of all those things as she drove the wooden knife into Lucien Moreau's heart. Black fissures appeared on his face, spreading over him. And a moment later, his skin cracked apart like wet stone. Chapter 38. This will be the last blog post on Bill Story's journal. He was drained by two newborn vampires only hours after this went up. Because I'm his friend, he trusted me with his password in the eventuality that he didn't make it back one day. He'd never intended to be a war zone journalist, but he took up the mantle with enthusiasm and dedication after he was trapped inside Springfield's cold town. And although his death is a terrible tragedy, I believe he would have been glad that he died as he lived, in pursuit of a story. Bill will truly be missed by his friends, by the community of truth seekers to which he belonged, and by the world. M.G. Tomorrow I should have some really interesting footage to post. One of my neighbors, a young woman going by the name Christabel, perhaps for Coleridge's poem Christabel, although the different spelling makes me doubt she knows it, asked to borrow some equipment. She has some new guests staying with her, including another young woman, calling herself Midnight, who wants to record her own transformation into a vampire. If I loan her what she needs and show her how to set everything up, she's promised that I can be one of the witnesses and even tape some of the footage myself. It's a rare opportunity, one that I'm surprised to find dropped in my lap, after years of trying to find someone willing to let me record this very thing. Why do I want to do it? For one thing, because there's very little footage of the change in the public sphere, although I am sure there are reels and reels hidden away in government labs. And, of course, it's likely to get this blog a lot of traffic. But I have to admit to myself, and to you, because I am a confessional sort of journalist, that what I am eager to try to see is the exact moment of change, the spark, if you will, of transformation. And I am eager to see it with my own eyes. The big question of vampires, the question that haunts governments and individuals alike, the question that bugs me every night when I see their red eyes watching the citizens of Cold Town, the way hungry cats watch fish in a bucket is, what are they? Are they diseased or demonic? Are they humans who have become ill, deserving hospitals and care, as some have argued? Or are they the bodies of our loved ones, animated by some dark force that we ought to seek to destroy? Living here in Cold Town, I've tried to observe and document our new world, but I have failed to be able to answer this one basic question. I have even failed to decide for myself. Maybe it's crazy to think that I'm going to be able to tell anything significant just from watching a human girl become a vampire. After all, I will be far from the first to see it. Scientists have observed vampirism, even undergone it. But I still want to be able to look at this woman in the eye when she rises from the dead. I want to use something entirely different from instruments and monitors. I want to use my instincts. I want to see whether I believe I'm looking into the same person's eyes. There's something easy about the idea that vampirism is some kind of disease. Then they can't help it that they attack us, that they commit murders and atrocities, that they can only control themselves sometimes. They're sick. It's not their fault. And there's something even easier about the idea of demonic invasion, something forcing our loved ones to do all manner of terrible things. Still not their fault. Only now we can destroy them. But the third option, the possibility that there's something monstrous inside of us that can be unleashed, is the most disturbing of all. Maybe it's just us, us with a raging hunger, us with a couple of accidental murders under our belt. Humanity, with the training wheels off the bike, careening down a steep hill. Humanity, freed from the constraints of consequence and gifted with power. Humanity, grown away from all things human. And so, dear readers, the answer I hope to have for you tomorrow will not be a scientific one. I hope to be able to decide for myself. When we turn, is there something shoved inside of us? Or is it more that something inside of us has been released? Chapter 39. Death is a very dull, dreary affair, and my advice to you is to have nothing whatever to do with it. W. Somerset Maugham. Tana walked out of the hall, pushing past Corps de Tenebre guards and heading for the front door. She turned back once to look at Gabriel standing in the center of the floor like a marble statue painted with red, but her head was pounding and her neck was sore, and when she opened her mouth to speak, she found herself struck dumb. It was all too much. She had glutted herself on horror, and all she could do was stumble out of the house and fumble inside her leather dress for Jameson's cell phone. Cool air brushed over her skin. Pearl. She had to find her sister. But if her sister saw her now, she'd scream and scream and scream. Blood was so sticky. Gabriel hadn't called out to her, hadn't moved. But then she'd nearly ruined his revenge before she'd stolen it for herself. Maybe he was glad she'd gone. "Come to the Eternal Ball," Jameson's phone said. "We got her." Tana walked through the streets of Cold Town and felt nothing. It was easy to find, even as disoriented as she was. People didn't mind giving directions, apparently not bothered that her face was spattered with blood, not minding that her hands were dark with it. Their casual demeanor was horrifying, but not as horrifying as how easy it had been to push a knife into a begging vampire's heart. She found the place. The domed church with stained glass windows painted black along the first few floors. Strobe lights lit the panes on the dome. The door, papered with pink stenciled posters, was painted the same tarry black as the windows. Music thrummed from within, and a few people sat on the steps, smoking and talking. A girl with green hair and a dozen braids held up a video camera to interview an elderly woman with long white hair and gleaming red eyes. Tana recognized her with a dull pang of surprise as the old lady from the last stop. The doorman pulled aside the velvet rope, waving Tana ahead of a small line of people waiting to pay the cover charge, not even bothering to take her pulse. Maybe the rules were different for people accessorizing their red dresses with a large quantity of bluish-red blood. Then she was inside, among the dancing throng. Music pounded the air, and a carpet of people filled the hall, twirling and shaking to the music. Girls and boys danced in cages that rose and fell from the ceiling in sudden, heart-stopping roller coaster jerks, making everyone scream. And above it all, cameras like the ones she'd seen on Suicide Square, like the ones in Lucien Moreau's house, watching everything with their pitiless eyes, broadcasting the whole thing live. There was a bar along one wall that served alcohol from copper distilling vats. It spilled into mismatched mugs. On the outer edges, a few kids passed joints to one another, the heavy odor of hashish competing with a whiff of rot to spice the air. In one corner sat a remainder of an old confessional. Kids waited in line to sit in it, draw their curtains, and tell their sins anonymously to a camera. A girl stood in line, tears running over her cheeks. Behind her, the dance floor was full of people thrashing and jumping and whirling. The cavernous eternal ball was oddly familiar. Tana had seen it before on the screens of friends' computers and on posters and lockers. Now, moving with the crowd, it felt unreal, like being on the set of a movie. She suspected that Pearl must love it. A shiver went through her body, then a second one. She scanned the crowd, trying to pick out her sister. Her gaze snagged on a familiar figure, his back pressed against the staircase support beams. For a long moment, she studied his navy military jacket with the arms torn off, his garter belt with opaque white stockings and big black boots, his glittering blue eyeliner. He had something taped to his arm that looked like a shunt. It was Rufus, she realized, sweat tracing its way down his neck as he danced. As far as she could tell, he was alone. A red-eyed boy and a blonde girl knelt in front of him, taking turns drinking from the tubing attached to his arm. Tana's stomach lurched, half with disgust and half with hunger. She staggered to lean against the rail of corrugated metal stairs leading to a cordoned-off second floor, taking breath after breath until she was sure she wasn't going to be sick or attack anyone. She had to find Pearl, had to keep herself together long enough to take her back to the gate. And horribly, in that moment, she thought of Gabriel watching her leave the glass ballroom. Gabriel, who had seemed utterly mad, but who'd known exactly what he was doing the whole time. Gabriel, who'd put aside revenge for a little while to go on an adventure with her. She shook her head, which was a mistake. It made her head throb worse than ever. Tana, someone said. And then Valentina was there, beside her, pressing a mug into her hand. She'd changed her clothes, pulled back her hair, and washed off all of her makeup. Oh, holy hell, Tana. You're okay. You came back. She drank automatically, the alcohol burning down her sore throat. Look who we found, Valentina said. And Aiden swung into view, smiling his innocent, fanged smile. Pearl was sitting on his shoulders, as though she were much younger, her gangly 12-year-old legs dangling over his chest. Around her throat was the heavy garnet locket. She grinned at Tana, her expression dimming when she saw the blood staining her face and darkening the red of her dress. Hey, Peanut, Tana said softly, just as their mother used to. Don't call me that, Pearl said, dignity clearly offended. She was wearing a sparkly black shirt, jeans, and her favorite pair of blue cowboy boots. Her eyes were lined in black pencil. Tana turned to Valentina, taking her hand and pressing it. Thank you. I can't thank you enough. The girl shook her head. No, wait. It was Aiden who found her. Aiden? Tana looked up at him, disbelieving.
I spotted her not far from the gates, Aiden said. She was pretty freaked out.
Pearl gave him a look of deep betrayal. I had a plan. Aiden was the only one of us who knew what she looked like in person, Valentina put in, and the only one who wasn't a stranger. Tana nodded, reaching for Pearl and staring at Aiden. Thank you.
When Pauline called me, I figured I owed you one. Maybe more than one.
Aiden bent down so Pearl could climb off his shoulders. She came into Tana's arms, hugging her tight. Tana could hear the bird wing beat of her heart and smell the sweetness of the blood under her skin. But if Aiden could bear it, then so could she. She pressed her mouth to Pearl's hair and drank in the scent of her, memorizing it.
I just wanted to be here with you, Pearl said. Her thin shoulders shook. I wanted to help. I didn't know.
It's okay, Tana whispered, hugging her even more tightly. It's going to be okay.
We saw you, Aiden said, pointing to one of the screens suspended from the metal girders. I mean, not all of it, probably, but with Lucian at the end.
She looked over at them.
You saw what happened?
Lucian Moreau's dead, said Valentina over the music. We saw that. We couldn't hear everything, but it looked like he went crazy.
You looked awesome, though, Aiden said. And for the first time, when he smiled, his red eyes and sharp teeth seemed like a normal part of him. Nice dress.
I'm sorry, Tana, Pearl said,
her fingers digging into Tana's arm. I thought he... I really didn't know.
Of course you didn't.
Tana pulled her sister off to one side so she could talk to her with some privacy.
I didn't know either. And that's why you have to leave Cold Town.
I can get you out, but you have to promise never to come back. Never, ever.
But no one leaves,
Pearl said wonderingly. Well, you're going to, Tana said. Right now.
Pearl gave her a long look. Aiden promised we could have fun tonight. If I can leave, can I still leave in the morning?
Tana flashed Aiden her most vicious look. He shrugged elaborately.
What could I do?
He asked, as though he was something other than a fearsome vampire.
Anyway, don't you think it's a bit unfair for her to come all this way and not have a story to tell all her little friends? You know I'm a pushover for a cute girl with big begging eyes.
Pearl snickered. Tana didn't quite trust herself to speak. For a long moment, she looked at the swings where brightly painted girls and boys dangled above the crowd, at the flashing lights and at the cracked dome far above them. It was beautiful, in its way.
Fine, Tana said. But you go back to the gate just before dawn. Promise?
We'll walk you there. Pearl nodded.
Can I dance with Aiden some more? He'll protect me from any other vampires.
He smiled his charming smile. A face like a wicked cherub. That was what she'd thought before he'd ever turned. It was even more true now. He might be a monster, but he was Aiden, too. And Aiden wouldn't hurt Pearl.
Sure, she said. Just don't tire him out.
I am the undead, he informed her.
I am indefatigable.
Tana watched them spin off into the crowd, Pearl's hair flying behind her like a dark banner.
You okay?
Valentina asked. Tana shook her head, trying to smile to take the sting out of it, but the smile felt as if it came out a bit sickly. It was odd for everything to be over, and to be both the same as before and utterly changed. It was odd to think that, like it or not, this was her new home.
I'm going to the bar, Tana said. See if I can wipe off my face with a wet napkin or something. That'll make me feel a little more human.
Valentina nodded, and Tana pushed her way through the crowd. Twice, someone stopped to give her a high five or to offer her a round of drinks in her honor. Once, someone stopped her to offer a drink from their shunt. She pushed away from them dizzily. She supposed that Lucian wasn't nearly as popular in Cold Town as he'd been on television. Spotting Jameson sitting at one end of the bar, she headed in his direction. He saluted her with his cup when she got close enough to lean against the concrete top.
Congratulations, he said, signaling to the bartender.
A moment later, Tana had another mug set in front of her, handed over by a woman with candy apple red dreads who clearly didn't care about ID. Tana hopped up on a stool. He clinked his mug against hers and announced,
You're famous. You know that, right? And you're going to be even more famous after tonight.
She downed most of the contents of the cup, wincing. Then she poured the rest over her face. It stung, but she figured that meant the alcohol was disinfecting as it was supposed to.
You have any kind of tissue? She asked.
He reached into his pockets and came up with an old-fashioned folded-up men's handkerchief. She took it and wiped her face, turning it a very dark red.
Sorry about ruining this thing.
That's what it's for.
Look, I'm serious about you being famous. One of only two survivors of what they're calling the Sundown Tragedy, he said, not sounding very sober. The girl who drove an infected friend and a vampire all the way to Cold Town and turned them in. The girl who killed a vampire on camera? Oh, yeah. Video of you has been all over the news and the blogs. The footage of you wrestling around in the dirt next to the garbage cans with that girl. Midnight is particularly popular. And now, you killed Lucian Moreau. You should charge for interviews.
I was worried Pearl was going to be mad, Tana said. She loved Lucian's show.
Jameson laughed.
You've got to lock me up, she said.
Lock me up and throw away the key.
What about your sister? He asked. She's going home, and if I ever want to see her again, I know what I've got to do. He gave her an appraising look that reminded her alarmingly of his mother.
I know a place. We can go in the morning.
Then he hesitated.
Are you sure about this? You sure you don't want to be a vampire? You're here in a sea of people who will give you their blood.
Hell, I'll give you mine if you want to turn.
You think I should?
She asked, resting her head on the bar top. The air was hot with the heat of pumping hearts and racing blood, rising up off human skin. Just inhaling made her feel dizzy. It was tempting. Give in, give up.
It's hard not to want that around here. They're the top of the food chain.
Apex predators.
So why don't you turn? Get your mom to bring you over.
I'm contrary, he said with a snort, looking out onto the dance floor. She followed his gaze and saw that he was watching Valentina as she talked with a boy in a long leather coat. Aiden and Pearl were still spinning in mad circles.
Sometimes I don't know what I want.
Tana liked the feeling of the cool concrete under her cheek. It was rough and smooth at the same time, like the way she imagined a dragon's scales might feel.
She's pretty, he sighed.
Yeah. She told me how great you were, saving her and her friend and all. Now he grinned a rueful grin and shook his head.
Oh, now I see where you're going with this. Save your breath.
You don't like her? Tana asked, and then wished she hadn't, because if he said something awful about Valentina, she was going to hate him.
Of course I like her, he said, as though it was hard for him to imagine how anyone wouldn't.
And if you tell her, I'm going to make you very sorry you opened your mouth.
Look, Valentina is... it's hard to explain. She's here for one reason and one reason only. Same reason most people give up their safe, normal lives to come here. To be vampires. She isn't looking for someone like me. She might bring home a regular guy sometimes if she's lonely, but she's not serious about any of them. She's looking for someone like your friend out there.
Boys were so stupid, Tana thought.
You should dance with her.
He winced, as though she suggested he stab himself in the foot.
I don't really dance. And she was just imprisoned. Maybe she's not really up for dancing.
Tana shrugged, sliding off the stool.
Let's go ask her.
Absolutely not, said Jameson.
Oh, so you're just going to sit here in the shadows, watching her like a crazy person, Tana said, making sure she doesn't get in any more trouble?
If she does, there's not much I can do, is there?
He took another gulp from the mug in front of him. It had a blue band around it and a crack down one side, which appeared to have been glued hastily, because there was still a line of hardened, clear material, like a badly healed scar.
She thought your mom was your girlfriend, Tana said.
She made a gesture to Valentina, vague enough to mean anything, and then pointed to Jameson. He looked alarmed.
And she wanted to save her because it was something she could do for you.
That's how she wound up imprisoned at Lucian's.
I bet she didn't tell you that.
What are you doing? He asked, grabbing her arm hard enough to hurt.
If you knew what kind of week I've had and what kind of week I'm about to have, then you'd know you better just go along with me.
With that, she dragged him up off the stool and out into the crowd. He gave her a murderous look, but he let himself be pulled. Valentina saw them coming and looked, if anything, more terrified than he did. Pearl ran toward Tana, though, eager for more dancing, waving up at the cameras overhead as though she was waving to all her friends back home.
This isn't going to change anything, he said under his breath. And then they were dancing together, all five of them, sweat slicking their limbs and the music buzzing in their heads. Even Jameson was smiling as Valentina spun around him, his fingers lingering a moment too long on her hips and his gaze slanting down, shyness coloring his cheeks. Aiden whirled Pearl in his arms, lifting her into the air and making her laugh. Tana danced until the pain in her head faded away, until her bare feet hurt from being pounded against the floor, until her body was gloriously exhausted, and with every move she knew she'd won the day because she'd survived it. Valentina somehow persuaded Jameson to stay on the dance floor. He had his hands circling her waist and her head was bent toward him like a flower bends toward the sun. And Tana finally understood how the wildness of the eternal ball was the wildness of grief, the intoxicating dance of carnival, where one leaves oneself at home and becomes something else for a night, hoping that the old skin will still fit when one comes back to it in the morning. The way they arranged things was that Pauline agreed to take off from camp, drive to the gate, and pick Pearl up on the outside. Tana and Aiden walked Pearl there, through the winding streets and the refuse, past the bodies and the swarms of roaches. Dawn didn't yet blaze on the horizon, but the air had already changed, the wind bringing the warm smells of day before the daylight itself. Tana held Pearl's hand in hers. Her sister was getting sleepy, stumbling a little, eyelids drooping as the excitement of the night wore off.
"It's my fault you're gonna be stuck in here forever," Pearl said in a hushed voice. "I messed up everything."
Tana took a deep breath and then shook her head. "I might not make it out of here, but that's because I might not beat being cold. And if that happens, then I got to say goodbye to you in person. And if I get better, then I'll figure something out, okay?" Pearl looked skeptical, but she nodded.
"Okay.
And you're going to say goodbye to Pauline for me. Give her a big hug and make her believe that I'm doing fine."
"She's going to see clips from the feed," Pearl said,
in the tone of someone who felt honor-bound to point out the obvious.
"Well then,"
Tana said, realizing that her sister was right, "it's going to be even more important that you convince her that I'm fine. Don't I seem fine?"
"I guess,"
Pearl said. Tana shoved her shoulder, making her grin. They walked a while in silence. Then, as they passed the hand-drawn sign for a shot of Depresso, Pearl looked up at Tana and blinked.
"There was a vampire boy at the Eternal Ball who said he knew you."
"What boy?" Tana asked. Pearl shook her head, touching the garnet necklace.
"He said, 'It's an honor and a delight to meet you, and a tragedy you're here.' He had a weird way of talking, but he seemed nice. He started giving me a message for you, but he changed his mind."
Tana tried to convince herself that Gabriel's deciding not to pass along a message didn't mean anything, but since he hadn't spoken to her himself, that was hard to believe. Aiden raised his eyebrows at Tana, but he kept his mouth shut. Then it was time to lean down and hug Pearl again, to tell her that she loved her, to drink in the warmth of her skin and listen to the thunder of her heart, before letting her go at last. Watching Pearl walk into one of the swinging iron cages alone was the hardest thing Tana had ever done. But she did. And she made herself a new promise. She was the girl who went back to try to do the impossible thing. Outside Lance's farmhouse, when all she wanted to do was run, she'd forced herself to go back through that broken window. When she'd managed to escape from the room with the skylight, she'd still gone back for Aiden. She'd even gone back and killed Lucien Moreau. And if she could go back and do all those crazy, impossible things, then maybe she could be crazy enough to go forward and save herself, too. The next morning, Jameson locked her in the root cellar of an abandoned Victorian house, along with plastic milk jugs full of boiled water, some cans of food, a can opener, aspirin, a bunch of blankets, and whatever was left of the stuff she'd bought inside the walls. She detached a handcuff to one of her wrists and run the other through a chain she'd bolted to a pipe. When she handed over the key to the cuffs to Jameson, she was on the verge of telling him to forget the whole thing, to let her out, except that she was sure he'd break his promises and do it. 88 days, 3 locks on the door, 53 links in the chain, 1 bare bulb swinging from the ceiling. She slept for a while, fitfully, in her nest of blankets. Then she ate cold beans with a plastic spoon. Finally, she decided it was time she set up the camera before she wasn't able to. Her hands were already shaking as she shoved the first of the battery packs into the back of Midnight's old video camera. By the time she set it up on the tripod and plugged in the live box she'd bought off some kid Jameson knew, she needed to cut the heel of her hand with the jagged edge of a can and suck a little of her blood to steady herself for what came next. Then she turned on the camera and sat down, cross-legged, on the ground. Looking up into the shining black lens, she started. "Hi, I'm Tana Bach. I'm 17, and a few days ago there was a party and..." No, never mind that. If you're watching this, then you've probably already heard about what happened there. "Look, I just want to thank everybody for all the nice emails and wall posts and stuff. Thanks, too, mysterious and maybe even legit production company that wants to film me killing vampires. But this is what I'm going to be doing for 12 and a half weeks, so if you want to broadcast something, broadcast this. And Dad, if you're watching, don't be too mad at Pearl, okay? It's pretty glamorous to be a vampire. It makes sense that anyone would want that. So give her a break, okay? You've only got one daughter left. And Pauline, thanks for saving my sorry ass. I should have called you back sooner. And for everyone else, I thought I would show you something other than the glamour. This is what it's like to sweat out an infection. I've got a bunch of water and some cans of creamed corn, and I'm going to scream and beg and puke my guts up. The chains holding me are pretty good." Tana was drawing breath to say something else when she heard the unmistakable sound of one of the bolts on the door turning. "Hey," she called. "Who's there?" The second bolt turned, echoing in the empty space. "Jameson?" Her heart thudded as she pulled against her chain, realizing the vulnerability of her position. "Well," she said to the camera, "someone is coming to visit me in the secret room where I'm supposed to be holed up alone for everyone's safety. Hopefully they're not going to..." The door opened and Gabriel stepped into the room. He looked around, taking in his surroundings. He was wearing black jeans and a black shirt, almost exactly what he was wearing when she met him. The only differences were that he wore heavy silver rings, shining with lapis and hematite, on his fingers and a leather bag slung across his body. He looked as strangely beautiful as ever, his features a touch too large for his face. Walking across the room, he switched off her video camera. "Hi," she said, unable to quite manage more than that. He closed the door and sat in the dirt beside her. "I heard that you gave away your marker." She shrugged, trying to seem casual, as if she weren't chained to the wall of a room, as if he wasn't the scariest guy in the city, as if she hadn't killed his maker. "I figure that I have to be realistic about my chances. You know how many people make it through self-quarantine? The numbers are low. I might cut up my skin so bad to drink my own blood that the cuts go septic. Or I might forget to eat regular food and starve. Or I might spill all my water while I'm having a fit. Better to give the marker to some little kid, right? Your sister," he said. Tana nodded. "My sister." Gabriel closed his eyes, sooty lashes brushing his cheek. "I'll stay with you." "What? No," she said automatically. "No, that's crazy." "I'm crazy," he reminded her. He'd said it perfectly matter-of-factly, and it almost startled a laugh out of her. She took a deep breath to cover the impulse. Look, do you get what I'm going to be like? I'm going to be puking and probably pissing my pants, not to mention screaming. Her hands started to shake again, but she pressed them together between her knees, hoping to hide just how sick she was. I don't want you seeing me like that.
Tana, when you left last night, I thought that I had no right to go after you. No right to even beg your forgiveness. And I still think it. So I am not here to ask to be forgiven for my arrogance, or for what happened because of it, although I will ever be profoundly repentant. But let me sit with you through the long night. Here is a thing I can do.
He reached into the bag and drew out an odd array of manga, ripped paperbacks of books, both classic and modern, and a small stack of crumpled magazines.
See, I even brought some things to read aloud. I wasn't sure what you'd like, so there's a bit of everything.
Why? She demanded. Because of all the things he could be doing, it made no sense that he would come here, to do this. Lucian was dead, and she knew that for some vampires, there were ways in and out of Cold Town. Gabriel could be on his way to a chateau in the Alps and drinking from girls half-drowned in red wine.
I thought you were probably pissed off. I mean, you came a long way to kill Lucian, and because of me, you didn't get to.
No, Tana. Truly. Though it must grieve you to have done it, your striking that blow certainly didn't grieve me.
He paused, seeming to steel himself, and then began to speak very quickly.
I love you, you see, and I fear I have no way to say or show it that isn't terrible, except coming here. I would kill everyone in the world for you, if you wanted.
He seemed to notice the look that passed over her face before rushing on.
Or not, obviously. But I thought you might rather have me read aloud.
He picked up an old issue of Rolling Stone from the stack, lifting it vaguely.
And sit with you, like a normal person who loved you might, if you had a normal illness. And since you don't, I'm just right for what you do have.
She started to giggle, unable to help herself. He never said anything she expected, ever, and this was no different. Clearing her throat, she tried to find the right words.
I'd rather you didn't kill everyone in the world, yes, that's true. And I have feelings for you, too. Big, weird, crazy feelings. It's a rare enough thing to find someone who can see me the way I am, no less to peer down into dark parts of my heart, the parts of me even I don't want to look at.
You did that, and you laughed at my jokes, too. So I'm scared. Because you're not just not human. You're not like anyone. There's nobody like you in all the world, and it's you I want. I want you. And I hate wanting things, and I especially hate admitting I want them.
His mouth curved into a happy, hopeful smile.
So, I can stay?
Panic filled her.
No, 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 you can't stay. If you stay, you'll let me out. I'll beg and beg, and you'll let me out.
I won't, he said, shifting closer to her. You didn't ask me to let you out of Elizabeth's room when you were cuffed to her bed. You broke out yourself instead of simply asking me. Remember that? You didn't think I would free you then.
This is different. Besides, I was probably wrong.
Hush, Tana, he said, petting her hair. Oh, my sweet Tana. Remember that I'm still a monster. I can listen to you scream and cry and beg, and I still won't let you out.
His voice made her shiver with a delicious combination of nerves and calm. She remembered the footage she'd seen of him long before they'd met. Imprisoned and insane underneath a cemetery in Paris, drenched in blood and cut in a thousand places.
If anyone knew what it was like to be alone and in pain, it was him. For the first time since he walked